9. Master Reynolds brought to book. The children sat quietly for a few moments in the blackness. They were stunned. "What shall we do?" rushed through their minds. Justice pulled at his sister's apron. They crawled, as silently as they could, over the sacks back to the foot of the stairs. They reached the bottom after stumbling into many mysterious bundles. They listened to the scurrying of the rats about them. Justice felt his heart pounding against his chest, and his hands trembled so that he could hardly hold to the steps. He knew Prudence felt the same. It was with great sighs of relief that they reached the top. Prudence whispered, "What shall we do?" "Oh, it's so frightening, Justice. What can we do? What shall we do?"
"We shall tell Father." "Straight away," said Justice sternly. "We shall have to."
But we have no right to be down there," whined his sister. "We shall be in very serious trouble for going below. Dreadful trouble. Father will be very angry with us. We can't say anything, we can't."
"But we must tell Father. I know we shall be punished, but we must tell Father. We must. We have no choice. He must learn of what we've heard. We can't have our people cheated by the captain."
They scrambled up the next stairs and reached their parents with all haste. By this time, they had awakened from their shallow, fitful sleep and had begun to wonder about their absent children. "Where have you been?" demanded their mother. "I've been so anxious. Why didn't you tell us you were going off?"
"You were asleep," replied Justice sheepishly, his eyes cast to the floor.
"What's the matter, my boy?" questioned his father, standing up. "Come on. I can see there's trouble afoot. Come on, tell me all about it. Something's wrong. Where have you been, and what have you been doing? You can't hide anything from me."
Justice shifted from one leg to the other. He tucked in his chin and kept his eyes lowered. He dared not even meet his father's piercing glance. He twiddled his fingers nervously.
"Come on, my boy, speak out."
Justice opened his mouth. It was dry. Words would not come. He gulped. He licked his lips nervously. Prudence pulled at his sleeves.
"No, Justice, no. We shall be in dreadful trouble."
He turned to her.
We must," he replied, biting his lower lip.
"What's all this?" said Mr. Lovelace.
"What's all this? Trouble? What's the matter, my boy?"
He pulled at his son's sleeve. "Come on, I want to know."
Mr. Lovelace put his finger under his son's chin and jerked it upwards. He looked straight into his eyes. "Tell me."
Justice began slowly, very slowly, but soon he was blurting out the whole story with a rush. Mr. Lovelace heard their story with a grim, serious look set on his face. As the story unfolded, his face grew more and more cloudy.
"Right," he said when Justice finished. "Is that it? Is the truth you've told me?"
"Yes, Father."
Mr. Lovelace caught hold of the low beam above his head. He looked down grimly at the children. They could not decide whether Master Reynolds or they were the object of his unmistakable anger. "I shall have something to say to you two later, for going below," said he, waving his finger at them. "You've done wrong, very wrong. You've done wrong to eavesdrop. And soon you shall know the extent of my displeasure. Meanwhile, I have work to do." He turned sharply. He made straight across the deck to the far corner. Justice and Prudence could hear an indistinct but animated conversation. In a short while, a group of four pilgrims had assembled at the bottom of the stairs. Their faces showed their single-mindedness. They had come to a decision that was plain for all to see, and no one would shake them from it. All had set lips. No smile was to be seen. Up they climbed, undid the ropes, slid back the hatch, and clambered out onto the open deck. The light dazzled their eyes, the wind whistled around them, and they saw the white-topped, grey-green seas running high about the little ship. It took their breath away. Safety lines stretched across the deck. Mr. Lovelace pointed towards the captain's cabin. He did not waste his breath in attempting to speak above the howling wind. Instead, they bent their heads and made their way aft. Holding on to the ropes, grabbing for very life, they pulled their tortuous slipping way across to the captain's quarters. Mr. Lovelace raised his clenched fist and clouted at the door. Without waiting for a reply, he pushed and went in. The others followed. Inside the cabin, the captain was seated at his table with a chart spread before him. Another tall, brightly dressed sailor was standing at his side. Together they were poring over the chart. The opened door allowed in a gust of prying wind which lifted the chart from the table. The captain looked up. "And who might you be?" he said slowly. Without pausing for reply, he went on, "Who told you that you could come in here, uninvited, to get back to the hold? Keep to your proper place. I can tell you're a pilgrim," said he, with undisguised distaste. He made a vague gesture towards the door with his hand. The rings on his fingers sparkled. "Get back, I say, all of you. And close that door behind you. Get out, I say." But Mr. Lovelace and the three other pilgrims stood their ground. "No, sir." "Not so fast," said Mr. Lovelace with steady voice. "No, sir," repeated the captain, lifting his head and slowly rising from his chair and pushing it back behind him. "No, sir, no, sir. What's this? Mutiny, I call it. No, sir, you dare to speak to me like that? No, sir, indeed. And in my own cabin." "And who might you be?" he demanded. "Who gave you the right to know, sir, me, eh? Answer me that."
"My name is Matthew Lovelace," came the reply.
"Master Lovelace, is it? What's your business, Master Lovelace? What's so pressing that you have the leave to barge into my cabin and deny my orders to my face? Tell me that."
As he spoke, he prodded his chest.
"My cabin, my orders. What's your business, you high and mighty pilgrim?"
Mr. Lovelace drew himself up. He breathed in deeply. "We shall not be browbeaten by your bluster, my man. We have pressing business to see to. We shall be heard. We come about the ship. She's leaking."
"Leaking, eh?"
The captain threw a pair of dividers down upon the table in disgust.
"Leaking, you say? Leaking? What do you expect, man, in a storm like this, may I ask?" he snapped. "There's water everywhere, and you want to know about a leak? Leak, indeed. What do you land people know about the sea? Nothing."
He lowered his voice.
"My advice to you, Master Lovelace, is that you and your friends stick to your Bible preaching, and you leave sailing to those that know."
He sat down at his table and looked up to his gaudy companion. "What say you, mate?" he challenged.
"Very proper, master," came the abject reply. "Very proper, if I might say so."
"Enough of this. She's leaking. She's leaking, I tell you," asserted Matthew Lovelace.
"She is leaking."
He paused. He took a deep breath. "And that's not all. We know your game. We know all about your plans. We know that you don't intend to take us to our new home in America. We know that this vessel is not seaworthy. We know you won't stay with us, even though you promised us a year, if ever you get us there," he added wryly. "We've deceived us long enough, Master Reynolds."
You know, what do you know?"
Mr. Lovelace advanced towards the captain. He put his hands onto the table and straightened his arms. He looked straight into the captain's eyes. He spoke very slowly and decidedly.
"'Tis true. We know little about sailing, that much I grant you, sir. But we know all about your game. All about it, I say."
Slowly the colour drained from the captain's face. Then he shook his hand.
"Bluff, bluff," he snapped. "Get out, you landmen, you preachers, get out, that's the way."
He pointed to the door.
"Water everywhere. And you say she's leaking," said he, with unconcealed disgust. "How far have you sailed before?
Tell me that, I paused. No reply came. I thought so. Enough, I say, interrupted Mr. Lovelace. You cannot bluff us any more. You know she's leaking. And we know your plans. We want this ship made seaworthy. Are you prepared to risk the lives of women and children in this floating wreck? Plans, you know my plans, Reynolds mimicked. How do you know my plans, my clever friend?
Nabel Wilson, gaming on the lower deck. Not above a half hour ago.
Mr. Lovelace spoke deliberately. That's how we know your game.
His hand dropped back to his side. The captain fell silent.
He exchanged knowing glances with his companion. There was an inward struggle. After a time, he began to speak. He spat out the words, Nabel Wilson and his drink-driven tongue. I told him to keep his mouth shut. That drunken swab. He'll pay for this. He thumped the table. He'll pay.
So you don't deny it, Master Reynolds?
It's true, then. Master Reynolds looked up. He began to tap his fingers on the table. Suddenly he stood up, angrily pushed his chair aside and paced his cabin. Nabel Wilson shall pay for this, he muttered, punching his cupped left palm with his clenched right fist. Yes, he shall pay that for fool. He waved his fist wildly. He shall pay.
He regained his seat. He seemed to be in a world of his own. Abruptly, he awoke to the continued presence of the pilgrims. He tried to stifle his rage. Slowly, an ingratiating smile came to his lips. He looked up. He plucked his ear. He stroked his stubbly chin.
Well, well, still here. Ah, well, I'll tell you what I'll do.
He jabbed at the chart.
Let's see. I'll put her in at Dartmouth for repairs. You can take advice there, if you will. Yes, yes, Dartmouth will do nicely. I'm an honest man. That's as good as an offer as you'll get.
Honest man, indeed, retorted Mr. Lovelace. Honest? You don't know the meaning of the word, sir. The four pilgrims were not to be deceived by the captain's apparently generous air. Had they not discovered his plans?
Just a moment.
The four black-clothed men retired to a far corner to discuss the proposition. After a few minutes of whispered, animated conversation, they came back to the table. Mr. Lovelace spoke.
Dartmouth will suit us well, said he.
He placed his hands upon the table and leant toward the captain.
We are simple, plain folk, he confessed. I admit it. I'm glad it is so. But we have paid decent, honest money for your ship and services, and we expect a fair bargain.
And there's something else I should like to say to you, sir. You should know this. You may try to cheat us, but you will never deceive God. Think of that, sir. You can never deceive God.
The three other pilgrims nodded and murmured their agreement.
The pilgrims made such a stark contrast to the captain and his friend. Whilst the pilgrims were plainly dressed all in black and white, the sailors were richly attired in their finery and were much bejewelled.
Mr. Lovelace concluded, Are we understood? A decent, fair bargain this time, is it?
Yeah, you have my word, Reynolds mumbled with a quick move of his hand.
I hope your word is to be relied upon.
The pilgrims moved to quit the cabin. At the door they stopped and turned back.
Mr. Lovelace spoke. Dartmouth it is then, Master Reynolds. Dartmouth for repairs. And none of your tricks this time, if you please, he said with emphasis.
The captain said nothing. He merely glowered in reply.
The pilgrims quietly turned, opened the door, and were gone.